You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. It is a glorious recording night indeed. RIP to the 49ers, and the P does not mean peace.
also for the Chiefs too.
Yeah, although you have the Kings. Talk about the Chiefs. For me personally, first of all, shout out Floss. Floss, I don't have no smoke with y'all. I just get tired of seeing Jackson Mahomes and the fiance doing the most on the timeline. Once I saw Buddy do a dance on Sean Taylor Memorial, I was like, yeah, man, we got to get him up out of here, man.
Hey, man, you, my division is smoke, and you already know what it is with the suckers, man. We don't even have to get into that
49ers. I just find it amazing they were able to have that much success with quarterback play like that. That was a miracle in and of itself, but it can only go so far. What's that? It's only so long fake thugs can pretend, man. That's the line. That's the line.
The gospel.
Man, and, you know, to quote Marshawn Lynch, man, I'm thankful.
That's all I can say for today, man. Say. That's all I can say.
I'm thankful. Anyway, we got some dope stuff to talk about tonight. We just had to get that, you know, had a dance on the 49ers grave and the Chiefs graves right quick. I have no smoke with Rams or the Bengals. So whoever wins, you know, God me bless. Either, you earned it.
Me either. Go ahead and enjoy your chip.
You know, I rock with Joey B. I feel like Odell got a bad rap messing with Baker. So whoever wins, God bless. Let's start with these all-star starters, man. Timeline was going crazy. Let's start out East. KD, Giannis, Embiid, Trey, DeMar. Any issue with that five?
I mean, I guess, you know, some people going to have the issue with Trey Young. You know what I mean? Some people could kind of look at it and be like, hey, you know, why don't you go ahead and put, you know, Jimmy, for example, or why not have Levine, for example, on there. But I think other than Trey, and even with Trey, he's playing so well statistically. He's had such a great year statistically. It's just nitpicking, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? All-stars should always be a mix of production and wins. I'm not one to just say all wins, guess you win. Like, I've never been that type of guy for the all-star game. So I'm fine with the East for the most part.
I know that was crazy. I remember DeMar, that first month and a half I seen DeMar was like playing out of his mind the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. So that doesn't surprise me. Trey is having a hell of a offensive year. So man, I get it. Man. But I feel like Levine's not that far behind. And when it's that close, I like to reward the winner. I feel like Chicago, with the season they're having, me and a half came out the number one seed, despite all the injuries they're going through. I probably would have gave it to Levine, but like I said, that's honestly nitpicking. I feel like the other four was kind of set in stone. Like, you know, nobody's going to argue Embiid, Giannis, KD, or the way DeMar was playing. Like, I feel like that was kind of infallible. So I just feel like the fans got it right with that for the most part. I'm not pushing back too much on Trey, so – I would have went Levine, but it's not something I'm going to sit here and fight about. You know what
right.
I mean? So, you know,
right.
we're good with the East. In the West, it was going to be a fun conversation because I know Kings, his agenda with mixed going against reality. We're going to see where he goes with this. LeBron, obviously. Joker, obviously. Curry, obviously. Morant. Morant beating out Luka was an upset to me. That was kind of crazy. I thought
that was crazy.
Yeah, I thought, you know, small market. Luka's got the international, you know, crowd behind him, and in a bigger market. But
I know, for all the flack we give the NBA for publicizing small market teams, I think they've actually done a pretty good job in getting the Grizzlies out there on the internet. I think they've done a good job with they marketing for the Grizz.
That's fair. I don't think they got pushed back on is when they pulled the Grizzlies Spurs game off, which would have been Ja versus DeJounte.
Yeah.
They put the Knicks versus somebody. It was like wasn't even a good game. It's just because it was
that was early on in the year, right?
No, that was like 2 weeks ago.
Or 2 weeks ago? Yeah, okay, like, yeah. I think, and that's the thing. Like they game schedule is still not good for small markets. Yeah, I'm saying right. At least on like social media and media wise, they at least try to put the Grizz out there.
Right, and then lastly, Kings stay 10 toes down.
Yes, finally, sir.
2022, his boy
paid off.
Andrew Wiggins, voted an NBA All Star starter. So I'm gonna let you close this out. This is your man. This is what. So at first, I was like, "There's no way," okay. But I go down the list of kind of quote unquote marquee forwards in the West. They all have not played or have missed a lot of time. Anthony Davis missed most of the first half. Zion hasn't suited up. MPJ hasn't suited or played like five games where they were like, no, he's done for the season, right? Paul George hasn't played half the season, right? Even Kawhi, if you want to cup, that hadn't suited up. So you go down that, even at the guys on bat, no, Karl-Anthony Towns, center, right? So he's not even in the same position.
But it's front court. So I get
front court. Yeah, sorry, you're right. So front court, even, Cat is arguable, but, Wiggins being a two-way, Wiggins defense, y'all gonna argue it. They're the number one seed or number two seed at the close of voting. I think they just announced Monty's gonna coach the game, coach Team LeBron. You even go down further with guys putting up maybe heavier numbers. Brandon Ingram, missed gang of games, right? Only played 35 out of the 50 games. So at the end of the day, I mean, name-wise, it looks crazy because Wiggins' reputation was kind of in the dirt before last season. He saw a little redemption. But how are you can't really argue this from my end. The more that I sat and thought about it, you can't really argue it based on the games that, guys have played and missed and, contributing to, a winning team. You can't really argue it. So go ahead, Kings. Take your victory lap on Wiggs, man.
You got too much talent to be a scrub. I mean, you have people looking at a guy who averaged 24, 25 points at one point, being able to hit that mid-range with the explosiveness and athleticism that he had, and they was acting like he was never going to be a good player. Like, that's that type of thing where I start to believe in the philosophy of our guy, at Ball Don't Stop, Like, at some point, you guys have to start using logic, bro. You can't just look at the math and say that, oh, this Wiggins, he can't play no more. Like, come on, bro. Look at his skill set. Look at his build.
Right.
Look at his archetype, man. Stop. Like, use some critical thinking, bro. Like, use some critical. He was never going to not be able to produce in this league. He was built too perfect for the wing, and he's too good of an actual basketball player to not have an impact once he ended up in the right situation, which he did. I mean, he ended up in the right situation. I know I haven't given Unanimous his credit for helping my boy Wiggins out, but I will give him his credit on now that we're on the pod. Yes, Unanimous did a great job in getting Wiggins better opportunity. A lot of teams are putting wings on Curry, which is allowing Wiggins to play smaller guards, and he is feasting on those guards.
Yes, good point.
I applaud Kerr for letting him cook in the post area, allowing Wiggins to play his game when he has that mismatch. Also, with the whole All-Star thing, someone like Brandon Ingram should be ahead of him. Somebody you want to argue, Aiden or Cat, I agree. But at the end of the day, like, what are we talking about? It's like somebody says, fan voting.
My thing why it didn't bother me, because those fringe guys, they're going to end up going anyway. Like,
yeah,
Booker, Cat, and Aiden are going. Exactly. You know what I mean? They're 100% going. Like Chris Paul, Booker, Aiden. So my thing is, so obviously, for the sake of quote unquote starting, Phoenix not getting the guy voted in raised a lot of uproar. Miami not getting the guy voted in raised a lot of uproar. Those are the top two seeds, like the top seeds in each conference at the decision of who's coaching the All-Star game. So it'll be Spo for the East and, Monty for the West. No All-Star starters on each team. I heard you argue this, and I respected you. I think you started this last year because I know you really are big about protecting, you know, the big men.
Right.
Do you think it's time to go and the way the league is now, just go with a straight five, top five bulk getters period in each and do away with the positions? Or do you like the current front court? They kind of met halfway with front court, back court. They kind of met kind of halfway. Do you think it's time to go all the way in and go straight five players, or keep it how it is with the front court, back court?
I say keep it how it is. I think people are too caught up and they say positionless basketball. But that's kind of a lie, you know what I mean? Like, you still have guard types, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just play certain dudes at the five and think it's gonna work out, you know what I mean? Like, you still have to fit an archetype, you still have to fit a mold, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think front court and back court is really, really dope because a lot of front court guys are interchangeable. I agree with that philosophy because a lot of the front court is interchangeable. You see like guys like Mobley who can go from big to power wing to four. You know what I mean? And you got guys like LeBron who can also go in from wing, power wing, four or five. Draymond Green, the same thing, wing, power wing, four or five. So it's like, I think front court is dope. But it's like, come on, bro. Top five, like backcourt guys don't play in the front court ever. You know what I mean? Those aren't, I mean, like you have a few like the Harts and the GPs and whatnot that do play the four, but that's the most you'll see them. Like, you know, maybe the Bruce Browns play the four. Like, that's the most you'll ever see. I mean, so it's like archetypes and roles still matter. I hate how they're trying to push, like some people are trying to push basketball to make it seem like these roles are outdated when they're not.
Right.
Like some of these roles still philosophically from a foundational standpoint matter on the floor. So no, I'm not in support of going just top five locations. It just doesn't make sense. Like being the best at your position, being the best at your archetype, that matters. Like that should count for something.
I respect that. So you know, you talked me off that ledge. I was leaning into straight five, but I think you raised a good point.
It just don't make sense to me. It was like, I'm not trying to see a starting five of like four guards. Like who plays like that? You know what I mean? Like, come on, bro.
You're right.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So while we just bounced off Wiggins, let's get to his teammate, you know, the guy on the team, Steph Curry. It's been wild. So he hasn't shot 50% back-to-back games since November. Since December, he's at 24-6-5 on 38-35, 89 shooting, 3.3 turnovers a game. So his assist to turnover ratio is less than two. Since the new year, 21-7-6 on 37-31-89 splits. And this is a hefty sample now. It's not just a week, a couple weeks. This is like 2 months of basketball where it's way below what we're listed to. This is a guy who's shot 50, 40, 90 multiple times in his career. I think his Warriors are still 37-13. They're still living off the attention he gets a lot. He creates looks for everybody else, before the gravity people get up, listen to this and get upset. We're acknowledging that. But it's been a visible drop off from what we saw last year over the chunk of the season. So is this slump or the beginning of a decline, a mix of both? What do you got for me, bro?
You can't say slump at this point no more, bro.
Two months is a lot.
And I called that when I saw that game. People were like, oh, he had 39. I'm like, that's the problem again. And it's not even just the analytics people, it's the box score watchers too. for people who don't know what they're saying. Like, the way he's getting his points is very, very labored. You know what I mean? He's struggling to hit open threes. You know what I'm saying? He went on a phase with just 3-point hunting. So I think it was hurting his game and the team. So I think somebody had a good point. I think Curry, I think this was Cam, it might have been Cam who said this, but I think Curry, as he starts to understand some of the, you know, things are starting to diminish, the quick twitch, the touch on the three. I think what he needs to realize is that he needs to be smarter with his 3-point shot selection. I think that's one of the things he'll have to understand. It's like, I can't launch these kind of threes because I don't have the quick twitch to get the same separation I used to get, or I don't have the same touch on the ball to be able to get a three off on certain angles. Because you remember, this Curry used to just really, remember, he would shoot awkward. Like, he would take his jump shot hella awkward and lean into a shot, but his touch was just so good and his aim was so good. He would just splash it. But it's like, the older you get, like, that's not going to be something you can hit. And, you know, people look at LeBron, they be like, man, how's LeBron this great? But it's like, he's had to reinvent his game so many times each offseason, you know, over the years. Like, he's come in and he's changed the way he's played often because he understands as he's getting older, he has to do things differently. But I think with Curry, he's going to have to come to that realization himself. It's like, okay, I'm getting older. Certain things aren't going for me the way it's been. I need to change my game because I have the talent to still be a top guy in this league, but I have to change my approach to how I want to get my buckets. Like, it can't be what I was doing in my heyday no more.
Right. So I look at that. I did some research and looked at some things. I just want to share with you and get your thoughts. And then this is my theory that I came up with. So I had to double check Curry because last year, I think I posted the graphic a couple of times. He was like 95th to 100 percentile in everything pretty much. Like, it was an all-time individual season last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. So I'm looking at, you know, people talking about decline, and decline is here. So I look up, it's three things I want to bring up. So first, he's still, after the last 2 months of hell, he is in 100th percentile for isolation scoring this season. 100th percentile for isolation scoring, 94th percentile in pick and roll as the ball handler. Like, and those aren't really things that lead, like, say, like, decline. Like, that's like athleticism, ball handling. Like, you still got that stuff if you're able to, you know, if you're able to perform well in those two aspects of the game, right? But where the struggle is, his wide open shot making is like bottom of the league. It's kind of insane. He's missed so many wide open shots. So my question for you is two things. One, you can tell he's visibly bulked up these last 2 years. Like, that's the first thing. And secondly, do you think at age 33, you know, 10, 12, 13 years in, do you think the running around that he does over the course of the game may finally be catching up to him just a tad?
That was my point, is why I said he might have to reinvent himself.
Okay.
When you look at what you say, and then Marvin calling for this, Sonny has been one of the biggest problems of this. He definitely needs to be on ball more. He needs to be more of a traditional point, you know, as he goes older. It's funny, right? Because you think that off ball is less taxing, right? Like, because like LeBron, for example, for this season, he's morphed into more of an off ball player because he doesn't want the taxing role of being on ball as often. So he's kind of morphed into an off ball player more so. And for Curry, it needs to be the opposite because it's like, the way Curry plays off ball is very active. Like, he's not a stationary off ball guy, or he's not like a guy who, like, you know, picks and chooses when to move off ball. He's constantly in movement because that's how Golden State maximizes their offense. It's built around Curry's off ball movement, hence the term gravity, right? So he's always in constant motion when he's off the ball. So I think what they need to do, they need to stop having so many movement-oriented actions for him. I think they need to rely a lot on Clay off ball, obviously, now that he's back. I think you also need to utilize guys like Wiggins in the post more to, you know, take pressure off, you know, take pressure off, you know, having those actions from Curry and Klay, always having to rely on those to get guys open. And then the key biggest thing is just putting Curry on ball to where he can take advantage of his best in the league pick and roll ball handling. Because, you know, with Curry, it's always a problem because you know he can pull up whenever, so you have to respect it. He gets the ball in the pick and roll. That's a dangerous advantage. Like a dangerous advantage. I get it. You don't want to overdo it because we know what happens when you overdo it with Luka and Harden. You're going to wear yourself down. So you don't want to overdo it. But it's just, you, like you said, it's always been finding the mix, finding the balance of let Curry be able to play a traditional point, and also then using his off-ball ability to create for others. But I think they need to take the load off Curry off ball. They need to stop trying to make him have to hustle so much to get guys going. Right. Because you can tell his body is just not responding the way it's been, and it's affecting his play.
Right. Yeah, I think that's accurate with the missed wide open shots. I still think he's going to normalize at some point and get back into the flow. But I think of course, all that stuff, I think the stuff that you raise is absolutely fair. I think the one counter, I think they do a lot of that too, is because that's the way Curry plays is the only way Draymond's effective.
So that's the
trick there.
Yeah.
Because you make Draymond your passer, you have to respect it or guard him. Because if Draymond is, you know, performing a dribble handoff, you can't sag off, or you got Klay or Steph coming off wide open. So keeping those guys off ball makes Draymond a threat. So like you said, I think it's a balance. It's a balance. We'll see what happens going forward. I mean, the Warriors still sit at 37-13. It's definitely a first world problem, you know, not like like other teams. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, I'm not calling the Warriors. Could obviously the playoffs are going to be a war. Nothing's easy. But I felt that's why I felt that I'm a little more comfortable with leaning towards Phoenix like I would. I know you picked Golden State, and I still respect that's going to be because it's going to be a war, but I feel a little more comfortable leaning towards Phoenix because of, you know, unless Curry turns it back. But I think it's going to be a war regardless. So, you know, it'll be fun to watch. Obviously, I think I'm higher on Memphis than most people are. I think that team is really good.
Memphis match is really good.
That's what I'm saying. I think I was talking to somebody. I was like, you sure the Warriors want to punt games and not want to get this first seed? Because we've seen Memphis against, I think it's the last 2 years, just a two good years of data now, them going against Memphis. For some reason, it's just some teams make it hard for you. So
That's a bad match.
We'll see how that goes. I think
and Memphis got a star now, so it's not like the old right. Knicks, right? When it was a bad matchup and they didn't have a star who could close. They got a star who could close now.
Right. So we'll see how that goes. Moving over to the projects of the Western Conference, we got the Lakers sitting in ninth. But Anthony Davis did come back. I think after the first game where his management managed, they actually beat Brooklyn, who's in there a little bit of a tailspin themselves, losing four in a row. AD, two things I noticed. I'll let you tap in here after this. He moved very well. That was amazing. I think he dropped a little bit of weight. He looked a little thinner from what I've seen. Averaging 27 the last two games, getting to the cup. Jumpers still a little off, 7-for-20 outside the paint the first couple games. But we're going to give that some time before we, you know, give that. We got to get your legs back, get your sea legs back. So we'll see how that looks. Lakers did lose, have lost the last three games. They're 3-7 the last 10 games. But I think AD is given a reason to be, you know, glass half full. On the backside of that, it's kind of worrisome. LeBron, who's been a tank forever, when he has to go back to L.A. because of his knee, I think that is at least semi-serious. When you're talking about that age, knee injuries, I think that's something you got to look at. But just getting back to AD, Kings, what did you see? What did you like? What did you not like? And what's your hope kind of going forward with him meshing with, you know, LeBron, Russ, and company?
He's a lot more fluid. He's a lot more active. I think part of him taking the time off with that injury, I think he probably got his mobility up. I wouldn't be surprised if in the rehabs. They was focusing a lot more on mobility as opposed to, you know, strength and build. So I think he looks good. I mean, when AD is great, they always have a chance, but we know what the Lakers' problems are. It's not much to keep going over it every single week. I know fans every single week want to hang on a little slimmer of hope. But, you know, any shot this season like is going to come down to, like I've been saying, it's going to come down to the deadline. Any shot at this season, man, is going to come down to what can THT and none get you. Like, that's just really what it comes down to, as well as the 2027 pick. It's some packages I like out there in terms of, I think, getting some guys who would be solid in terms of wings. Like I said, I really like Bogey. I think the Hawks are shopping him and Horton, trying to get off those deals. I think that could fit the Lakers in their timeline. All definitely makes Russ more of a thing you can swallow at that point. But again, it's also going to come down to then, but, you know, is that something that, you know, Genie would want to, like, afford? You know what I mean? Like yeah. Does she want to pay for that? Because, like, at the end of the day, that's their other problem, too. It's like do they want to pay the money to foot a real contender?
Right. Right.
Like, do you want to do that? Like,
yeah, cause I'm thinking, like, not to be compared to Clippers or Lakers, but it's just, if it's the Clippers, they pay THT and they pay Caruso.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, they just pay them both.
Yeah, worst come to worst, we'll trade when it's not working. Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, you know, I mean, like, that's literally what the Clippers will do. They'll just pay both of them and be like, all right, whoever's not as good, we'll move it instead and keep the other. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And you have people, like I said, trying to talk about rebuilding. First of all, that's a lie. Number two, it's like, you could have both.
Right.
I mean, it's like, it's just, you don't, like, it's too much people letting management off the hook for clearly setting the team backwards. And it's like, I get it, man. It's a lot of delusion right now, and I get it. You know, you're a fan, you want to see them win, but man, you look. I'm not gonna argue with the fans. I get how being a fan is. You know, I'm there too with the Raiders and whatnot. But it's like when you have to take a step back and you have to look at where the Lakers are. You know, obviously LeBron dealing with that knee. Obviously, all those minutes at center are gonna come back to. I don't know why, like. I said this, I'm like, LeBron playing center is not a good thing. That's not a good long-term thing. I knew it was going to wear on him, so this doesn't shock me. I think they're just trying to make sure he's healthy because they understand even if this season's an L, that he's like they've seen that he can still do what he needs to do. So they're going to make sure he's ready to go for next season because, like, how many players can you say are better than LeBron even at this day and age? So it's like they see that, they're like, okay, he still got it. So we need to make sure we can preserve him. But it just comes down to, man, they set their season back with the offseason, starting with the trade of you-know-who. It's like you already knew they were going to be working from a deficit at that point, man. It's like, man, it's tough, man. Like, this season really, if there's no deadline miracle this season, you just have to chalk it up and make a miracle happen and then – re-roll in the next offseason, bro. But it's just gonna be hard to say that you're gonna beat Memphis, you're gonna beat Grilled Bowl, and say you're gonna be like, come on, bro. You can't talk yourself into that type of a fantasy with this type of team right now,
right? I think, yeah, and then you got, you know, top of that's down the road, but you know, Denver Murray is coming back eventually, you know, and then that you know, so yeah, I agree. You got something's got to give. We'll see what happens, man. Not gonna harp on too much, but I just wanted to talk about what you thought about what you saw from AD. I thought that was that was encouraging to see him moving. And then hopefully LeBron's knee injury isn't too serious. And then you can finally see him at, you know, full strength and get to rock from there. A team we haven't discussed at all. I was reviewing our notes from all this past season, the Miami Heat, which is kind of crazy because I think the last time we talked to them, we were like, yeah, they're a dark horse contender. Look at their roster. Yeah. And then we kind of that was a season preview, and then we just kind of let them sit by the wayside. But 50 games in, they are the number one seed in the East, number five offensive rating, number seven defensive rating, and I even think those numbers are low because I look at the games played. They got 50 games. Lowry missed 11 games. Jimmy 18 games. Bam 25 games. Harrell missed 9 games. And they still shot through and maintained. I think it's fair to call Spo, if not the best coach in the NBA, top three.
Him and Ty Lue, man, working miracles.
Bro. Yeah, so I you know, got to start talking about him in that regard. I think there's something to be said about continuity and a system in place. And I think they're scary just because of that. Like, you're going to have to – I think you're going to have to be – compete on both ends. When a team that's top 10, top 5 on offense and defense, you got to be prepared on both ends in a playoff series. And the fact that they play a lot of non-spacing lineups, so that just speaks to me to kind of Spo's ingenuity, because Bam and Jimmy aren't floor spacers, but they still find a way to put a top 5 offense in the NBA on the floor, which is kind of crazy to me. And I just think, you know, that this is a credit to Spo, really, and just everybody buying in. Even Lowry's a, you know, up and down shooter, but, you know, the passing, movement, screening, you know, getting out in transition after getting stops, I think it all works hand in hand. So I think we both respect Spo and Miami enough to say that they're a contender. Like, this is not fake at all from them.
Of course. It's never fake with them, because they've gotten to the finals already. You know what I mean? They've gotten to the finals with this core. Bam has shown that he's the best defender for Giannis, who's a reigning champion. You know what I mean? Like, they're just a very well built roster. That's a front office that has a vision for what they want offensively and defensively. The thing with having Bam and Jimmy, Joseph had a good point. You can't play more than 2 non-floor spacers at the same time. And I think the thing with the Heat is that they always find a way to either, if they're playing those two, it's those two, and they're having Duncan, they're having Hero, they're having Lowry, you know, they're having their better 3-point shooters playing around them. And if, you know, one of them is off and you substitute them for a guy like, you know, Tucker, or even put Tucker in and make teams have to kind of still respect that corner three, it's like you're still able to get away with some offensive, production while having ramped up defensive action. So that's the thing with them. They playing good two-way ball. They have a roster that's conducive for playing that. And it's just great roster. It's good roster, great coaching. And, and people talk about the culture, but the culture matters, you know.
Yeah, people try to think it's a buzzword, but that's
– It's not a buzzword. Yeah. It's a truth. Anybody who's played sports understands what the locker room means. You know what I'm saying? So it's like – you know, they're really a team to be reckoned with. Like, again, number one team in the East, even with all those missing parts. And they're a tough team. Great X's and O's. They'll be hell in any series. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you could, especially with Kyrie situation,
right?
Kind of looked like he took a step back. You know how they give Giannis fits, and you know the Bucks seem to be sleepwalking right now.
Man, I was just about to say, man, the Bucks are just not interested at all in this regular season.
They got the championship hangover like a mother, man. And then you have, you know, Philly not wanting to get rid of Ben Simmons here. They're holding out for the big fish. So it's like, and then Chicago, you know, as good of a story that they've been, still, you know, still got to show us in the playoffs type of situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like they're right there with anybody. You have to have the Heat, and they have the experience, they have the coaching, they have the pedigree. So it's like, they're the real deal, man. That's just what
right. You know what's crazy? I'm looking at the East. So you got Chicago, Miami, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly. That's 5, like, you know, like somebody in the first, one of those teams is going home in the first round just because of the way the playoffs is set up. Like, that's kind of crazy to me. And I think both, like, any scenario, like, if let's say if Philly finds a way to, you know, make Ben until they were to take the Sacramento deal, right? They're right there with anybody, right? And then you got, you know, Brooklyn, they get everybody full strength. Kyrie plays role playoff games. The Eastern playoffs is crazy. And even Charlotte. Charlotte's not on those teams, though, but Charlotte's playing a really good basketball league. Like, they're, like, solidified in that spot. So it's crazy. Like, I want to see, you know, what happens with Phoenix, Golden State, Memphis, obviously. But I feel like the Eastern Conference playoffs, like, from the first round on, it's going to be, like, blood in the water. like in that, you know, 3-6, 4-5 matchup. Like, it's going to be hell for somebody at some point. So I'm looking forward to that, but that's going to be crazy. Last thing before we get out of here, my Devin Booker agenda. Him and Zach LaVine are poster boy to look at the surrounding roster. Good to see them finally start to get their level last couple years.
Hey, man, you have Zach LaVine. You got Devin Booker. You also got Matt Stafford, NFL, man.
Right.
Environment matters, man.
Right. So, man. Suns sit at 40-9, best record in the league. They really, I think they're the first interesting stat on the Suns. We'll talk about Booker and deep, and we'll go more deeply on the Suns. They are the first team since the 73-9 Warriors to have 2 months where they won 90% of their games. So this is the second month they won 90% of their games. They're kind of blowing through the league right now. They remind me of a better version of Utah last year. Remember, we were both high on Utah because they bought everybody back.
Yeah,
they had a turnover last year. Yeah. And they hammered. Remember, they got all those wins last year. I think, you know, they're off a finals run. They got a lot of continuity. There's a lot of injuries and turnover from other rosters. But on top of that, the guys have taken legitimate leaps. So Bridges has gotten way better. Aiden's gotten better. Chris Paul is fitting in better. Right, second year there, right, more comfortable. You know what I mean? Campaign, building off the playoff run. You added Shamet.
Maintaining his production.
Exactly, right. So I think – you can honestly say they're the deepest team in the NBA. I think that, like, legitimately not. I think the biggest thing they did was replacing Frank Kaminsky in the rotation with JaVale McGee. Yeah, like that.
Real vet.
Yeah, like that, right. I think that, remember the whole thing in the center was like, what are they going to do with Aiden's off the court? I mean, they got killed in those minutes. McGee's not the same as Aiden, but he's serving. And on top of that, they add Biombo. With injury, and he's averaging 11 points a game. For some reason, he gets with Chris Paul, figures out how to catch the basketball all of a sudden, which was his big thing. He had terrible hands catching the basketball. So you asked a great question. We were talking about the show tonight. Devin Booker for MVP, how come he can't get any love? I just think, before I let you answer, I just think that the way that the narrative is written, like the narrative, MVP narrative seems to change every, you know, 4 to 5 years, right? I think the narrative this day and age is that, quote unquote, unfortunately, too much help. If a guy's roster is too good with certain names, mm-hmm. I think they start to disqualify a guy from the MVP race, right? And I think that's kind of what Devin Booker is going to be a victim of. And on top of that, he just doesn't have, like, there's not a single stat that sticks out. Where he's like, he does this particularly. He's just very good at everything this year. It's like it's 25-6-5,
It's great numbers, but like it's not like MVP numbers this era.
Yeah, and I think like he did one player of the month, so I can't even say like there's been a stretch of games, but it's like I think it's been that 2 months that Embiid's been having the last 6 weeks pretty much. Embiid went on that tear. You know what I mean? Even Curry start the season, came on that tear. You know, DeRozan averaged 34 a month. You know what I mean? So it's like he hasn't had like that period of play and get the wins. On top of that, with the way the narrative around Chris Paul is as a team whisperer, any like supreme success that they get is going to go to the credit's going to go to Chris Paul first, just the way that people watch the game. So like, where are you with, you know, Devin Booker and getting a little bit of MVP love?
No, I think Devin Booker, man, he's a very quality player. I think it's always going to be gauging how, like you said, with the Chris Paul situation and with the Aiden situation. Aiden has also emerged too. Devin Booker is definitely the best player on that team, I think. I think it's even safer to say this year than it was last year, but I just think that, you know, when you look at the type of leap that Mikal took, you look at how good Aiden's been, you look at how good Sleepy 3's been. Like you said, it's one of those things where it's like, he's not, he's the MVP, but it's not an overwhelming, he's a candidate, but to be the MVP, like he's not, you know what I mean? He's not like, he's not carrying that team in certain aspects in terms of, in terms of being the guy that's always going to overwhelmingly impose his will on the opposing team. You know what I mean? He's definitely their best go-to scorer. He's definitely defending at a high level. But you know what I'm saying? But you have Chris Paul. He's going to be – he's their best playmaker. You know what I mean? He's the guy who's going to set everybody up. Ayton's obviously otherworldly on the interior, and he can switch and not be played off the floor, small ball, super versatility. And then obviously Cam Bridges is their best perimeter defender. You know what I mean? It's like you have three other guys that are more valuable to the team in certain areas. So it's like Devin Booker being very good or great at a lot of things then just gets lost in the fact that other guys on his team are better at certain key attributes. Whereas if you look at the Grizzlies, it's like offensively scoring, playmaking, it's like John Morant's that guy for them. You know what I mean? Where you look at the Nuggets, it's like Joker's the guy inside. He's the guy playmaking. You look at MB's backpacking inside defensively, inside offensively. You look at, DeMar, you know what I mean? Even when Levine's there, when he's not there, DeMar's doing his thing, going off, taking those guys, scoring and playmaking and leading those guys to wins. You know what I'm saying? So when you look at it's just, like you said, it's one of those things where it's like they're faulting him for how good his team is. That's just what it comes down to, and it's going to hurt him. And I don't know, man. Like, I really feel like the reason why you don't see him get the epic MVP talk that you get is because these voters are expecting one of these MVP guys, MVP level stats guys on the team to eventually wake up, go on a crazy run, and they're just going to give it to them. Like, you know, all it takes is for Giannis and the Bucks to win 15 straight and MVP. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I just feel like voters are just waiting on one of those guys to go on one of those runs, and then they're just going to give that guy the MVP. Like, I just feel like that's what they're waiting on. And if it doesn't happen, then it's like, okay, maybe we have to give Booker the, you know, real MVP consideration. But I just don't see – I don't think you'll really see that until the end of the season if there is no other – and no one else whose team has made it, you know, a real conversation. But it's still too early, so I just don't – that's why I feel like they're not going to talk about it, because I feel like the voters anticipate – one of these guys' teams is going to catch fire.
Right. I think the MVP thing for me is a less of a deal, less of an issue for me than the All-NBA voting. Like, I thought last year was just ridiculous. I had never seen anything like that where the top – I think somebody – it was like – it hadn't happened since, like, 1973 or something like that, when the leading scorer – both leading scorers on the top two seeds in the West did not make an All-NBA team. They didn't miss a lot of time. I think Mitchell missed like 2 weeks toward the season, end of the season with his ankle, and came back early in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Book hardly missed any time, and they both did not make all the – I thought that was crazy. And the frustrating part – it's been negotiated. I think that's wild that All-NBA is tied to what your next contract can be. So I think, like, that's the frustrating part for those guys. They get called empty stats guys for, you know, 5-6 years. Team finally wins, and you know they don't really get acknowledged for it. It ends up affecting, you know, their actual, you know, fiscal gain, I think. And I think that's more of an issue for me. Like, you gotta get Booker on an All-NBA team this season.
Even a legacy standpoint, I mean, if you look at Booker's career, man, starting in the first year, 14 points a game, next year 22. Then he was 25, 20. You talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about to be 6 years or 5 years, sorry, of 25 and up, scoring pretty good efficiency. And it's like he doesn't get talked about like somebody who's at top. Like, this is probably, arguably, you know, maybe you can say Paul George is better. This is probably arguably the best two guard in the NBA. You know what I mean? Top 15 player in the NBA. It's like he doesn't get that type of respect. He doesn't get that type of publicity. And it's pretty sad because, like, he was punished for putting stats on a bad team. Now he's punished for putting stats on a good team. You know what I mean? It's corny.
You know, the crazy part is I've always been, like, a win-did-they-win guy. This dude, I remember – he scored 70 in a basketball game, and people acted like it was regular because they lost. And I was like,
talking about that because they lost because it was on the Suns, and he said the Suns stuck. Now he produces when the Suns are good. It's like, well, he plays on the Suns, and they're good now. It's like he's not even celebrating for staying on his team and helping them get it out the mud. Like, he came to a bad situation, lottery team. Now they're a contender. He don't even get celebrated for that. It's kind of crazy, honestly, when you think about it. It's pretty crazy.
I just think they got something in Phoenix. I think they're just playing around with Ainge's going to get paid because they let him hit free agency. Somebody's going to max him, and they're going to have to pay the max. So, you know, Ainge's going to get paid. I think they've got something in Phoenix. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that whole situation develops. Anyway, give Devin Booker more love. That's the point of the story. You want to punish these guys for not winning and then not show them love when they sacrifice. Do win. Sense, y'all gotta pick a side, man, and let it and rock with it, and let the shameless agendas go.
I feel like they really just love these guys who play that stats ball a certain way, where it's like you're winning, but you're winning because I'm taking the ball up, I'm running a high pick and roll, and I'm setting everybody up. Because if you look at the way they talk, like, look how they don't even talk about Luka no more because he's playing more team oriented ball. He's coming off the ball.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's like, you see how they don't even talk about him like that no more because he's not trying to hog the ball all game and put up gaudy numbers and try and carry them, quote unquote, to a high seed. Like, they don't even respect Luka now for playing ball, the hoop, the proper way. Like, bad, man.
They're on pace to win just under 50 games, which would be a career high for Luka. So, yeah.
Man, it's sad what they do in this league, man.
Whew. All right. Kings, real quick before we get out of here, we'll get into this more. Kay Cunningham starting to get loose after a rough start. I know you a big Mobley guy. I stay rocking with Kay. I think that the whole D and like four of the top five are going to be like special players.
I told everybody about Jalen Green. He's going to be a special player, but I told y'all the first year was going to be rough, man. Yeah. I saw you looked at his body type. Yeah. You already knew it was gonna be rough, but hey, if you have Jalen Green stock, hold on. It's gonna pay off.
Right. So K was always my guy. I stuck with it. Detroit is probably one of the worst situations to be in right now. Kind of closing the gap on Mobley. Still taking Mobley long term.
Yeah, you know, Mobley, people don't understand. Mobley has to play winning hoop right now. His team is competing, and he's sharing touches with Jared Allen. You feel me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Jared Allen is playing at an all-star type of level at the same position in the East. You know what I mean? And Mobley's still coming in, getting numbers, getting high impact. So it's like, it's going to be different for Mobley because he's always going to have to play within a certain scheme. Whereas I think Cade Cunningham, you'll see more monster games from Cade because obviously Detroit really doesn't have much going for him. Grant's not even playing right now. So he's going to get this opportunity to shine out. But Cade is very nice. We always knew he was nice. We always knew he was going to be good. I still got Mobley long term, but it's a lot. All those guys, good Suggs is looking like he's coming up, playing some good hoop. So, and then obviously Scotty, he shocked me. Like, he shocked me this year.
I thought Scotty was a project, but he's ready to hoop. I thought Scotty was a project.
He shocked me. He shocked me right away. So, it's looking like a good class this year. So, all these guys, I'm high on. If you have Cade being the best, I can't really knock you because it's still early. And a lot of these guys, I think, have the potential to make the claim for best in the class. So, if you got Cade, if you got Scotty, if you got Jalen, once you get his weight on, like, if you have Mobley like me because you think that he has generous talent, the big man, like, each guy got a nice claim, and it's going to be fun to watch, I think, going forward.
All right, y'all. Y'all know what to do. Follow, subscribe to pod. Follow at his Kingsbro on Twitter. Myself, JJ Maples 55 _MST. Give us some feedback. Anything you want to hear us talk about, let's do it. Give us a rock. Anybody wants to pod with, we got more guests coming on. We're gonna have Marcus Thompson from the Athletic on. But my man went to LA for the Rams Niners game. I'm about to get on his head. It was like, see, you went out there and got packed up.
Hey, somebody tell Pilo, man, calm down on the timeline. I know you angry, but you got to calm down on the timeline, man.
Right. Anyway, we appreciate y'all. Keep following, supporting the pod, and we are out of here.
Peace, y'all.